Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Radio. I want to start by saying thank you for all the great feedback we've been getting from everybody around the world about the radio show and your comments and everything like that. As you can tell, we've been implementing some changes based on your recommendations. As always, if you want to find out more about this radio show or any other radio shows that we have airing, we have some shows that run monthly, we have some shows that run on a nightly basis during the week. You can go to our website, which is www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And per the recommendations and everything that we're coming in from people, we did make some changes to that website. So you'll now see two new menu features on the site. One of them is the host tab, which talks about the different radio hosts that have shows during the week and during the month. And we also added, which was really useful for everybody, an archives webpage. And from that page, even though it's been lagging probably about a week behind, you can slowly scroll down that page and actually see all the different radio shows that we've aired over, you know, since we started the network, so that you can find replays a lot easier. As always, if you go to the link you're going to now to listen to the show, you can also find the replays for all the shows listed in the archives for Spiritual Connections Radio. So thank you for those feedbacks and all the great comments and everything like that. This evening, my co-host, Pam Latour, is taking the night off. We are actually pre-recording the show. So when you hear this, it'll actually be airing out in the middle of July. But my co-host, Pam, is actually taking the day off today, so she will not be on the show. As always, you can catch her radio show on Monday evenings at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. She does an incredible show every week, so make sure to tune in and listen to her show. With that, I'm really excited to have on the show this evening Meadow Lynn. And did I pronounce that correctly?
Meadow? Pardon? Yes, yes, of course.
So, you know, I've known about Meadow for quite a few years, and mostly from my connection of learning under the teachings of her mother. And, you know, it's a great honor to have Meadow on today because she's going to talk to us about her new book that just came out, and we're going to find out more about everything behind that. So with that, Meadow, can you tell people a little bit about, you know, your journey in life and, you know, where you got started with your writing and everything like that? I think I was always impressed with your school background, so you could start there if you want.
Well, you know, I think I'll even take a step further back to the very beginning of time, well, as measured by my life. You know, I've been passionate about food and cooking my entire life. So my earliest childhood memories involve crawling into the kitchen cabinets with the aid of a chair I'd, like, drag from the dining room into the kitchen. I'd crawl into those cabinets and pull out anything I could find to create kitchen alchemy. I created my first dish when I was 3 years old. And when I was two, my mom tells me that I would insist that we sat at the table for dinner and that we would have a full table setting, placemat, knives, forks, glasses, plates. You know, it was the 70s. My parents, they preferred to sit by the fire, you know, eat on the floor. They're a little more earthy. But already at two, I was setting in motion what, you know, has turned out to be my passion in life is eating well and living well through food. So, you know, it starts way back there. But then, Mark, as you mentioned, through my schooling, I kind of went a different direction. I've always been passionate about food, but in school, I got caught up in academia and I got a bachelor's degree in both French and English literature. Then I went to graduate school and got a master's degree from Columbia University in French cultural studies. But I did find a way to work in my passion for food in my graduate work. I actually focused my studies on the history and sociology of eating in France from what they call the ancient regime, which is pre-revolution, to the modern day. I examined the 10 years prior to when I was writing the thesis, so that was 1990 to 2000. So I did find a way to blend my passion for cooking with my academic work. But after that, you know, I became, as you know, Mark, I became a French teacher, and I taught French for 8 years, and I loved it. But I always felt as though there was something missing. I spent my summers cooking for my mom's retreats, and you know, when I drove to work and when I drove home from work, most of my thoughts had to do with what I was going to cook for dinner. I thought about what I was going to buy at the grocery store, how I was going to make it into a meal. And this intense passion made me realize that although I love teaching, maybe I needed to explore that aspect of my life, of myself, further. And so I did something that was really scary, and I quit my job. And, you know, it was the height of the economic downturn, and there were many naysayers who would say, how could you do such a thing? You know, aren't you scared? And I would smile and say, yeah, no, I'm really excited. And underneath that, I'm thinking, holy crap, I'm terrified. What do I do? No health insurance, no benefits, no salary. But I also knew that I needed to try. I needed to follow that passion, and I think that was really important for me, but I think it's also important for others that when there's something that you're yearning to do, that if you can take that leap, it might be scary as all get out, but there can be value in that too. And for many of us, if we look back to our childhood, it's the things that we love to do and the characteristics that we showed from an early age, those are the things that really are those passions that we can follow as an adult. And so that's a very long answer to your question, but that kind of is how I've ended up here.
Yeah, I think I really like that. And, you know, thank you for expanding on that. I'd like to dig into that a little bit more because I think that's key. I know it's key for me because I'm kind of going through exactly that same type of transition. You know, I left the corporate world and, you know, I'm kind of launching my wings and putting myself out there to start teaching and doing the actual spiritual work. And I think taking that step, you know, taking that step of, for all these years, you know, where I got a corporate paycheck and I was making really good money and, you know, always knew that, you know, I could even take vacation and they would pay me a paycheck. I'd get 6 weeks off every year and it was all paid. And just knowing that, you know, even if you're sick, you're getting paid. And it was really just a really big change. And I think it's probably a change that's probably not so hard for, and I'm sure it's hard for everybody, but I would say not so hard for somebody who maybe their entire life, their business is maybe consulting or running their own business because they're kind of in that space where they realize, you know, I have to do X amount of work over the next couple weeks so that I have an income stream coming in. And if I have certain business, you know, during certain times of the year, I need to save my money because, you know, during the winter, things slow down if my business is seasonal related. So, you know, going back to, you know, your experience and taking that change, you know, taking that step where you said, you know, I'm going to go off and do this other thing. I'm going to leave behind, you know, what I felt was defining me for so much of my life so far. And can you talk a little bit more about what carried you through some of those tough times of really just taking those first steps?
You know, I'm really fortunate that I have a very supportive family, and that really helped. And, you know, one thing is I'm unmarried and I don't have children, so I also knew that this was a good time in my life to take this leap, that if I had somebody else I needed to take into consideration, or I had dependents who counted on me for a paycheck, I might not have been able to as easily take that leap. And then knowing that I had parents that really were supportive and they encouraged me along the way, and that for me I'm so grateful for. And I know, unfortunately, not everybody has that support, but for me that carried me along, because it wasn't easy. There were times when it was really exciting and exhilarating, and there were other times when it was friggin' frustrating and scary. And, you know, I can't say that I didn't cry a lot, too, because it's a big transition. I spent all of my education kind of studying to become a teacher. And then for 8 years, I had the salary. You know, a teacher's salary, it's not like a corporate salary, but still it was, I had money coming in, I had paid vacation, I had stability, it was what I knew. And to give all of that up is very scary, but in some ways I think it would have been harder not to try. And so I took that leap, and 4 years later, some days are hard, other days are really exhilarating, but I'm so glad that I did.
So, you know, I can let everybody in and say, you know, into the secret that, you know, I've done the class out at the ranch, and I had the pleasure of sitting at the really nice tables and experiencing your cooking for the whole time of the stay there. The question I would have is, how do you make that jump from having all this great food and everything and being creative with the food that you have and just saying, you know what, it's time to write a book?
Well, that's a good question. And as I said, you know, in the beginning, I have been passionate about cooking and eating from the beginning of my life. And since the summer I graduated high school, I have been cooking for first. My mom taught feng shui, interior alignment retreats, and now she does soul coaching. So I have been doing that for, well, half of my life. So that is something that I've been doing for a long time and been very comfortable with. But my mom and I noticed, as you probably noticed as well, Mark, during your time at our ranch here in California, that deep shifts happened in the course, not just from the inner work that was happening in the class, but also by the sense of community that's created. And part of that comes from mealtimes, that mealtimes at our ranch aren't just about taking food in for fuel. It's a time to sit down, to slow down, to recognize those at your table, to break bread with others. There's a great word in French that's used frequently that exists in English as well, but unfortunately we don't use it as often in English, and it's called conviviality. And it's a word that actually means community and food. And that idea that sharing together with others and making mealtimes about experience, you know, and as you know, Mark, sometimes, you know, if we're having a Mexican meal, we don't just eat a taco. We decorate the table to you know, maybe we have piñatas or serapes as a tablecloth. We look at, my mom likes to talk about the buffet where the food is served as an altar or as the table setting, the placemat and the tablecloth and the plate as a mini altar. It's a way of honoring your food and honoring where it's come from the farmers to the people who stack the grocery store shelves, the person who cooks that food. And when you begin to recognize that our food has had a long journey and where it comes from, you think about the plants and the animals that have given their life for that meal, it actually begins to deepen your connection to all of life and open your consciousness further. So through that, my mom and I noticed these shifts that were happening in people from the ranch and wanting to share that, and kind of a blending of my passion in food and cooking with her passion and her 40-year career in spirituality and mind, body, spirit. And so my mom and I decided to collaborate on the Mystic Cookbook together to create this this sharing, I guess, if you will, of our two passions, so that others too can see the remarkable ways that, as we say in the book, that you can go from nourishment to nirvana.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think you could ask for a better mentor. I mean, talking about the fact that I do not have the number off the top of my head, but she has close to 20 or 30 books at this point.
Oh, my mom, she's written 18 books. Mm-hmm.
18 books, yeah. So, talking about, really kind of coming under the wing. So let's talk about the book and get some information out to people, because I'm sure people are wanting to know more about this. So the book is called The Mystic Cookbook, and I know you can purchase it on Amazon. What other websites do we want to share with everybody right now?
We have a website designed specifically for the book. It's themysticcookbook.com. That's with a the. So themysticcookbook.com. And we share excerpts from the book there, and there are also photographs and some delicious recipes. And as you know, Mark, the Mystic Cookbook is more than a cookbook. It is not simply recipes, though there are some, and in my, not so biased, or in my very biased opinion, they're quite delicious. They are all my own creations. But it's more than a book with recipes. In some ways, it's a cookbook for life, that the way that you approach your meals can influence your life, that the way when you begin to savor your meals, you actually, believe it or not, can savor your life more fully. So we offer a number of tips, suggestions, and strategies in the book of ways that you can approach not just cooking, but also eating. Because many people will say to me, I don't really cook, but it's not simply a book about cooking. It's also about the way that you approach your meals and how you think about your food, and how you enhance and increase the energy and vibration in your food.
So I have tons and tons of questions for you, but before I go to those, I want to take everybody on a little bit of a journey so they can experience what my life was like on the ranch, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, go for it.
So imagine that it's time for dinner, and we're in the setting, as Meadow had said, where there was multiple locations where we could set up dinner. We had a group of 20 for this training, for the time that we were doing the SOAP coaching, the past life regression training out on the ranch. And so we had a new family, and it felt like a family. I mean, and for someone like myself who came from a really small family, it was just such an incredible feeling to really sit down at a table with close to 20 people and really enjoy our meals. And also with the fact that Meadow and her father and Denise and, of course, the dogs would would all join us also for every meal. And you imagine being in a place that was designed originally for energy flow, the whole feng shui setting, that every place you were, all these different places, even if you were outside, just sitting and waiting to go on to another exercise or something. You had all these beautiful settings all over the property of outdoor furniture, and it could be in a garden, or it could be in a cabana, or it could be near a fountain and everything like that. Just this incredible, the way that the whole environment is so nurturing to your body to be there, especially for people who have a hard time being away from home and who, don't feel comfortable outside of their environments. I mean, you automatically felt like you were at home. And it was approaching the time for dinner, and I'll choose dinner as one example. And if you went by the kitchen, you saw a very busy Meadow, mixing, and, you'd catch her with the apron on, tending to the stove, and she'd be stirring something in a huge thing in her arm, and just basically multitasking with whoever was there that would help. And, for a lot of the time, some of the students, that were part of the group would be working in the kitchen, helping, doing some prep or, doing some cleanup afterwards. And you know, what's amazing that, kind of go back to thinking about this, is that no matter how busy you were, you always had time to take a second, you know, to answer a question or to talk to somebody or maybe to share some of what you're developing or creating. And I always remember that, you know, when I was out there, you know, that, you know, you always were there, you know. And so we had to choose a place to eat, and there was many different places that we could eat. And one of them was this beautiful dining room that was off from the main house. If you can imagine in the old England times of royalty, the long, long table that would stretch the length of the hall. And going into the back room to what would, for some of you, if you're familiar with Crate and Barrel, and imagine going into a back room that had, you know, place settings to fill that table with like 19 different themes, if not more, and all types of candlestick holders and all types of themes and everything beyond the plates and cups and napkins and, you know, all the different ways. And we would have a theme, and we would basically set the table for that. And because of that, every meal had a feel and energy and excitement to it that was beyond just consuming food, and really just, you know, enjoying, you know, being part of just really, like Beto said, just kind of sitting down and breaking bread. And we'd set the table, and after the table was set, we'd basically wait for this gong. It was this huge, maybe you can describe for me, Meadow. It was like this huge, like, metal thing up on top of the cabinet that would get, like, you hit it with, like, a mallet, and it would call everybody to dinner. And, you know, we would all come in, and it wasn't simply, you know, like a lot of spiritual places, going and getting into a cafeteria line or, you know, having a bunch of bowls of food on the table and you just sit down there and maybe you would talk or not talk to somebody that's there. Or, you know, a lot of the uncomfortable experiences you could have at some places where maybe you knew one person from the class, but you didn't really want to make friends with anybody else, even though you're supposed to be spiritual and friendly. It wasn't like that at all, because just you would basically move around the table so that you could talk to somebody else in the class, because it's common bond that got created by being with this group of people, which became really, and what I would feel would become my family, and just really creating that. And I've attended trainings and seminars all around the world, and I've been to so many, I don't even like to count them anymore. And I've never walked away with such a strong bond with people who are running the seminar or the conference or the people who are attending it. I mean, I can't say that I don't have lifelong friends, but if you were in a group of 20 or 30, it would be one person, versus coming away with 20 people that I would consider almost being my brothers and sisters. And, you know, that just kind of talks a lot about the environment that's created for this type of experience. So as we got the gong and we went into the room, we'd see Meadow standing there with her smile, and she would basically go through the theme and describing all the food and giving just such the breakdown. It felt like we were watching someone on the Food Network, just really going in and just explaining all the aspects of the nature of food, you know, the history of it, and, you know, even some language and stuff like that, and just really doing that. And then we would, you know, grab our food and sit down and then start talking with everybody. And meals always went long, because it wasn't all about just eating food and leaving. It's about really just getting to know and not only enjoying the food and talking about that, but also really just being able to kind of bond with the people that were there. And then there was always the yummy dessert. And it was just such an incredible experience. And I just wanted to share that with everybody, because I don't know if a lot of people have ever had experiences like that. And it was just something I definitely wanted to share with everybody. So with that, I'll shift back to you, Meadow, and just basically say, you know, when you're doing something like that where you have to cook for a group for the week, you know, where do you get the ideas, you know, and this will kind of go a little bit to talk about the book, I mean, there's just so much that you can draw from as far as food. I mean, you're not limited to your knowledge of what's in the book. I mean, you just have so much food that you could have prepared on any given day. So how did you define exactly what the week was going to be like, or the 2 weeks, and exactly how you lay out a menu like that, drawing from all the different possibilities that you could have cooked from?
Well, you know, this is the crazy thing. I don't actually create menu plans. I used to years ago, back when I started when I was 18, that summer after I graduated high school, but I discovered for myself that I really thrive on creativity. And when I had the menu plans, I felt confined within those constraints. So believe it or not, I actually don't plan it out. Of course, I have certain dishes that I often serve, and some of my favorites are the recipes that have ended up in the Mystic Cookbook. But I leave some of it open so that I can, just like a painter is inspired by the nature they see, or a musician is inspired by the sounds that they hear. For me, I get inspired by the colors and the flavors and the scents I see at the farmer's market or the grocery store, or I get a specific taste or an image in my mind of a meal that I want to create. And I let that be my inspiration. And I think that adds a certain vitality and freshness to the food, because I'm always excited by what I'm making. And sometimes I will plan out a certain dish. I usually buy the same ingredients, so I have some standbys, and some are like, okay, I have some free-range organic chicken, and usually I serve it this way, so I'll do that. And then if I notice myself feeling kind of bored, or it feels a little dull, it doesn't have that shiny glimmer to it, I will completely change the menu plan. You might not have even known this, Mark. Sometimes at the last minute, because I so much want to feel that excitement, that enthusiasm, and that inspiration for what I'm cooking, that even though sometimes it makes life a lot harder because I'm not doing something I've done a million times before, sometimes I'll even serve things I've never cooked before, but I get that excitement because it's new and fresh, and I think for me that's really important, because that energy goes into that food. If I were cooking something simply because I felt as though I had to, or, well, I always cook such and such a certain way, so okay, it's time to do that, I think in the food you would feel some of that lack of inspiration, that boredom, that you know, roteness, that when somebody is excited, or when they feel joy or love, it goes into the food. You know, we see that in movies like Chocolat, based on the novel by Joanne Harris, or same thing, like Water for Chocolate, based on the novel by Laura Esquivel. This idea that energy goes into the food and it can be tasted. You see, you know, in Like Water for Chocolate, I don't know, Mark, if you're familiar with that story. But
oh, yes, I am,
scene.
Yeah.
So there's a scene, as you know, where the sister has to, the main character, her name is Tita, she has to prepare a wedding feast for her sister, who is marrying the man that she loves. And she cries and cries as she rolls the dough for the masa to make the tamales, and she pounds the chilies. And her tears, her sorrow, goes into the food. And then they sit down for this wedding feast, and unbeknownst to everybody there, that, you know, they didn't know that she had been crying, everybody starts sobbing at the wedding feast, and they feel their own sorrow and the loves that they've lost. And of course, you know, this is magic realism. This is not the way, you know, you wouldn't necessarily see that at a wedding in modern day society, but there's something to it. Magic realism is based in reality. It's a magical version of it, and it is so true that energy, that love, goes into the food. It's just in the way that, you know, somebody might wax lyrical about grandma's apple pie. Grandma might make a really good apple pie, but most likely what you're also tasting, in addition to the butter and flour and the apples and the sugar and the cinnamon, is you're tasting her love. You're tasting her embrace, her chuckle when she takes candy from the candy bowl. Whatever it is, you know, you are tasting that in that pie.
Wow. let me just take a quick break. If you're tuning in right now, you're listening to Mark Rawson's interview with Meta Lynn. We're talking about her cookbook, The Mystic Cookbook, and you're actually listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. You can find out more about this show and any other of our shows by going to our website at www.spiritualconnectionsradio.com. And before we get into some Q&A, can you give out some of your websites?
The best way to reach me is at meadowlynn.com, and that's meadow just like in the forest, and Lynn is spelled L-I-N-N. So meadowlynn.com, and as we mentioned before, for more information specifically about the book, themysticcookbook.com, full of great tips, photos, and recipes.
Wow. So that was really incredible. Thanks for sharing that about, you know, what it kind of takes behind the scenes to be able to stir up a meal. It's not like you're cooking for two people. a really, really great experience, as I shared earlier with everybody. How much of what goes into the food and everything is certified organic? And how important is that to you as far as what you bring? And do you define something as being different between organic and then being able to buy from local farmers?
I have a two-part answer to that question. One thing that we write about in the Mystic Cookbook and that I believe in firmly is that you can enhance the energy and vibration of your food with prayer, with saying grace. Cultures throughout history have been doing it simply for the fact that it works. And what I believe in firmly is that no matter what you're eating, where it has come from, eating what you love and loving what you eat is very important. If for some reason where you live there isn't organic or heirloom produce or farmers markets, you know, rather than chiding yourself or your community for not having it, you can still eat the food that's available to you in a state of gratitude, with love, and infuse it with that energy that can raise its vibration, as I mentioned, by saying grace and or doing a blessing. But there's a Middle Eastern saying, trust in God, but tie up your camel. And so which is this idea that, you know, you need to trust in God, open up to spirit. But at the same time, it helps to take some steps on your own, too. So when you can, I am an avid proponent of organic produce and local and seasonal. It's, you know, the farms, and this is a topic for a whole other radio show, but, you know, our farm systems have turned into big corporations, and it's no longer simply about creating the best product available for flavor, for health. It often, unfortunately, comes down to money. And we're not provided with the healthiest foods in our stores for the most part. So when you can, buy organic, buy from your farmers markets, buy what's available locally and seasonally. It's better for the environment. It's better for your health. And it's also supporting a practice of farming that is better for the land. It puts more nutrients into the earth, but also small organic farms. And unfortunately, some organic farms now are owned by the same companies that are putting out the conventional as well. But what's behind an organic certification is that things are put back into the land, that rather than filling the dirt, the soil with chemicals, you're actually planting plants that will put more nutrients back into the ground, and then tilling that, and then moving the crops and reworking. It becomes a sustainable system that is, when you believe in the energy of your food, if you know that the soil has been loved and tilled with care and attention, that will go into the food, and that does make a difference on an energetic level and also on a simple flavor level. So I do believe firmly in the power of organic and local and seasonal, but also, as I said, it's also important, no matter what you're eating, to simply enjoy it. I think that is really at the crux of it, because, you know, we don't all have the opportunity to eat organic every day all the time. And so that I don't know why I said and, because I didn't have anything to follow it up with. So I'll just stop right there.
Yeah, you can always add the dot, 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 like everything
yeah.
else that we didn't talk about. So, you know, to kind of go off on a little sidebar, explain to everybody what it really means to eat seasonally, and how much of that do you incorporate into your process as you're cooking and stuff like that?
Can you say that part again? I think I missed the main part of that question.
Oh, I was trying to say, what do you think about eating based on seasonally, based on like what's available?
I have a two-part answer to that. There's two ways of eating seasonally. In the Mystic Cookbook, we have two chapters side by side. One's called Cooking Up Magic and one is called Legendary Meals. And in those chapters, we talk about creating meals, as I talked about, we have at our ranch, and as you mentioned too, Mark, that are events. They can even be transformative, where you travel from your dining table to other places, to other lands, to other inner realms. That in these kind of meals, you can indeed have great transformation, plus they're delicious and fun. And one of them we have is about eating the energy of a certain season. You can eat winter when you need this sense of pulling inward and kind of restoring your inner coffers, or the feeling of summer. You know, summer to me is like throwing your arms open wide. You're standing on a mountain looking at these vast expanses, these huge vistas, whereas spring has this energy of new beginnings. It's new life starting. And the autumn, it's cornucopia, it's harvest. We're reaping the seeds, the efforts of our labor. Oh, goodness, I'm tongue-tied there. But so each season has a different energy. So one of the things we write about in the Mystic Cookbook is that when you need that particular energy in your life, maybe you're starting a new business or a new project, and though it might be autumn, you might want to create a spring meal, a meal dedicated to the energy of spring, where you call forth that energy. Maybe you serve foods that are traditionally spring foods, or foods that give you that feeling of new beginnings, because this will set that template for the new beginning, that new endeavor, that new project you're doing at work. Or maybe you're feeling overwhelmed and you just need a break. You need to pull inward, restore that energy, your inner reserves. And then you might want to create a meal dedicated to the energy of winter. And in the Mystic Cookbook, we give a number of different recipe suggestions and tips and ideas of how you could create such a meal. So that's one way where you are eating, quote unquote, seasonally, but it is more about the energy. Then the other side of it is much more the practical side. When you eat foods that are actually in season and they come from nearby, one, you're cutting down your carbon footprint. Two, food that is local, because it doesn't have to travel so far, is picked most often when it's more ripe, so it tastes better. And guess what? Food that is picked when it's ripe has more nutrition, has more vitamins and minerals and flavor, and it is actually healthier for you as well as tastier. So there are many reasons to eat food that is seasonal and local. And then, as I said, also there's eating with the energy of the seasons, and that may or may not be eating food that is seasonal or local at that time, but it's more to connect with that energy of that season, because so many of us now, we live in a world where we're not connected to the seasons in the way that we used to, that we don't rely on nature in the same way. We get in our cars, they're air conditioned or heated, and we drive to our air conditioned and heated buildings, and we're not so connected. So eating both physically, practically, foods that are in season can connect you to the seasons. And then connecting with the energy of the seasons can also be a great way to deepen our connection to this greater circle of life.
Wow, that's incredible. So, I mean, we definitely don't want to give all the ideas away or everything. You know, there's a lot of great stuff to get out of the cookbook. But, you know, can you kind of just talk about a couple of the topics in the book that we might not have covered? Like, what else would I learn by purchasing the book?
Oh, goodness. You know, there's a lot in the book, as you said, and all of it I find really exciting. From creating a chakra meal where you could create a dish dedicated to each of the chakras, which can be very fun. We actually did that last summer. My mom and I taught a workshop together on becoming a mystic chef, which we talk about in the Mystic Cookbook. And the final evening, everybody, there were 21 participants, I guess, approximately, and we divided everybody into groups of three. So we had seven groups of three, and they had an allowance at the farmer's market to purchase fresh fruits and vegetables that were in season, and then each group was assigned a chakra. And they could interpret it however they wanted. Maybe it was the energy of that chakra, or maybe it was the color that that represents that particular energy vortex. Or maybe it was the body parts, or, you know, the part of the body where it was from. Whatever, however they wanted to interpret that particular chakra and create a dish for that chakra. And then we had laid them all out, and we had seven different dishes, and it was truly remarkable. Have you ever been to a potluck and everything tastes good, but there's no cohesion? Everything, you know, you know, and it doesn't really all go together, but it's all good. What was remarkable is we had 21 chefs, seven dishes, all different interpretations of different chakras, yet the meal had cohesion. Everything worked together nearly miraculously. And it was actually amazing that one of the dishes my mom tried, and she said, "This tastes like chanting." And I have to admit, my taste buds are not quite so refined that I can taste chanting. I can parse out herbs and spices and other flavors. I have not yet quite to that point where I can parse out chanting. But my mom could in this one dish. And what was funny is when she asked the three women who had created this dish, she said, "This tastes like chanting." And they all got this kind of sheepish look on their face. It turns out that each of those women had chanted over the pot, but they didn't tell the other two. So all three had chanted over the pot secretly. And it was so palpable that my mom could actually taste it. And she had no idea either. She had not seen them chanting over the dish. So chakra meals are just one of the many meals and experiences that we talk about in the book, and how also you can use color to connect more deeply with your food and access different parts of yourself as well. So there are lots about chakras and colors, but that's just one small part of the book among many other, you can tell I get all excited, but among many other meals, tips, strategies, suggestions, things that you can do to make dining more fun, more delicious, more spiritual.
That's excellent. Thank you. So, you know, I talked earlier about how incredible it is that, you know, to be able to work with your mom to work on the book, especially with the fact that she has close to 18 books out herself. What challenges, even under a mentor, what challenges did you face, you know, that you can share with us, and how did you overcome them when you were working on the book? Because I know a lot of us, I know like myself, I've been kind of starting putting notes together and everything because I want to self-publish my book, you know, in the next year. So can you share with us, you know, what the challenges were, even though you had a great mentor?
Well, you know, my mom and I had wanted to write this book together for quite a few years, and because we felt so strongly about this information we wanted to share that we'd seen make dramatic changes in our lives and those of people who've attended our retreats at our ranch. But we dragged our feet for a while. That I have worked with and primarily for my mom for most of my life. I've helped out in the office. I've been cooking for the retreats for 18 years. But it's very different when you work with somebody on a project that you both feel very connected to, and you really want it to, you really want to do a good job, and you want it to live up to your highest standards. And we have a great relationship, as you know, Mark, as you saw. But we were a little nervous. Like, how is it going to be, mother and daughter working together so closely in this type of project? That, as I said, we dragged our feet for a while, but we finally just decided, okay, we're going to jump in both feet. And the remarkable thing was we actually got closer, and our writing voice grew into one. Sometimes we'd quibble over, well, I wrote that. No, I wrote that. It was actually quite remarkable to see how similar we became because we spent so much time together. And it really, I think both of our passions and also our strengths, we were able to blend them well together. That I came from more of a cooking background, and my mom came more from the spiritual background. And my mom is very creative, and she had lots of great ideas. And really, the genesis of the book came from her. But then I have a very linear mind. And I studied literature and grammar. I love grammar, So we were a wonderful balance for each other, and that kind of mending and melding that I think created deepened our personal relationship. But I also think it enhanced the book as well.
So I don't know that much about the publishing industry, so I'll kind of put a question out here, but. Is the book translated in any other languages yet?
It is in the process of being translated into some other languages, but currently right now it is just in English, as far as I know.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what do you think is the key? I know you and your mother put a lot of work into the book, but I assume somewhere in the back end, as far as understanding the writing process, I assume there must be editors or proofreaders or people like that. Did you guys end up doing a lot of that work, or do you have to bring in someone else who actually does that piece?
We did a lot of it. We also had a wonderful editor at Hay House who helped us with some of the big ideas and some of the line editing, but we did the most of it, the grunt of it, I guess, if you will. And as I said, I love grammar, and I love looking for little tiny misplaced words. So for me, that is actually kind of fun. So we did the majority of that on our own.
Yeah. So I kind of hinted about this earlier, and I know you kind of touched on this, but we'll go back and touch on it again. Out of all the different things you could have brought into the cookbook as far as food and recipes, how did you decide the theme or the idea of what really ended up in the book?
You know, I don't even know where you can tell. I'm like, oh, blah, blah, blah. Not even quite sure where to start. Well, as far as the recipes go, I asked a bunch of people which foods, which dishes you remembered, which one has had a lasting impact. So I got some input that way. And then people ask me, what's your favorite recipe in the book? And I don't have children, but I feel like it's asking, like, which of your children do you love the most? That I love them all for different reasons. And, of course, those are the ones I chose to include because they are all recipes that I love. And I also chose them for another reason. I wanted to include dishes that could be easily made at home with simple ingredients that you can find at your local supermarket, natural food store, or farmer's market. Most of my recipes don't have very many ingredients, and they aren't very complicated to make, but they are full of flavor. And that was very important to me, to choose recipes that were easily accessible. And you don't have to have something super complicated to be delicious as long as you have high-quality ingredients and you cook with love. So for the recipes, that was kind of my thought process. As far as the text part and the ideas, it came from many years of my mom and I brainstorming and talking about the things that we've seen both at our ranch and in our own lives as far as food and energy.
Excellent. You know, for people who have not done any promotion of books and stuff in this time frame or in this time, what exactly is it like to promote your book? Like, you know, did you do TV shows? Did you go to Barnes & Noble? I mean, what exactly did the promotional part of it feel like?
The entire book industry has changed significantly in the years that my mom has been publishing books. The old model is no longer applicable in the same way because we live in this very modern, very technological world where everything is accessible on the internet. The old model, you wrote a book and then you went on book tours, and the book really was more focused on, you know, it was literature, even if it was not a novel. It was kind of a work that stood on its own, and then you traveled from bookstore to bookstore and you signed books and you gave talks locally and went on local radio and television shows. But as I said, now everybody can access anything from their home computer, which is remarkable. You can publish your own books on Amazon or through Balboa, as Hay House has a second imprint. It's much easier to share your message, to share with the world, than it was a few years ago with the traditional publishing model. It also means that, you know, there are many fewer bookstores now. Most people buy their books online or they buy digital books. They get e-books and download them to their Kindle or to their iPad or other reading device. So most book promotion now you can do from the comfort of your own home, even in your pajamas. So, you know, a lot of book marketing and promotion and publicity now is done through the internet, through the telephone. It's a remarkable. We are in an exciting time where things are constantly changing and shifting.
So, you know, I want to get into talking about a little bit more about yourself, but before we do that, is there anything as it relates to the book that you feel that we haven't covered?
Oh, goodness. Well, there's so much about the book, and I could, as I said, I could talk forever about all the different ideas and all the different ways that you can approach the cooking and eating of your food. But the main thing, and I touched on this a little bit earlier, and this is what it really all boils down to for me, is eating what you love, and as I said before, and loving what you eat. And that means when you eat something that is not in alignment with your views on health, or foods that maybe aren't ones you would normally choose, you still find a way to love it. If you're eating ice cream, love every delicious bite, because it will actually impact your body in better ways. You will metabolize it better, absorb more nutrients when you eat in a state of joy. And then the second part of that, let's eat what you love. I jumped to the second part. So that was the love what you eat. The first part, eat what you love. So find foods that you love. Some people will force feed themselves, quote unquote, healthy food, but hate every bite. Chances are they're not going to be as healthy as if they found foods they really love. So my suggestion is maybe, you know, kale. Everybody talks about kale these days. Kale is the rage. I love kale, but if you don't love kale, rather than forcing yourself to eat it because, oh, this is good for me, I have to eat it, maybe find something else that you do love. Maybe it's spinach or broccoli or asparagus. Because when you're eating in a state of joy, whether you're eating something that's considered healthy by everybody around you or not quite as healthy, all those options I gave are actually pretty healthy, but you will enjoy the food more and your body will get more from it. So that's my favorite saying, as I said, and I twisted it around there, but eat what you love and love what you eat. And that really is what it all comes down to for me. And that will enhance the energy of your food, your own personal well-being, and give you more balance in mind, body, and spirit. When you're savoring your food, you savor your life, as I said in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. So what's next? Is there a second book in the planning? I mean, what can we, are we looking forward to something coming down the road?
I sure hope so. I'm riding this wave for the time being, but I love writing, and writing is, as well as food and cooking, writing has been one of my passions, as you can see. You know, I majored in literature in college, so I would love to work on another book, and hopefully one will be in the works not too far from now.
Sounds great. So, just to kind of put this in time frame for everybody, it is July 1st today. When did your book come out?
It came out December 12th of 2012. It was a very exciting day. It was like giving birth.
Oh, wow. That's powerful. Yeah. I like the numbers. So,
yeah, and thank
goodness
the Mayans weren't right. Otherwise, it may never have come out. So.
Right? It would have been out on the bookshelves for a week or so.
Yeah.
So, what do you think is, we always like to ask each other, the people we interview, what is the secret to life? I mean, where do you think the happiness is and everything? And, what is it that you'd like? I think what you just said about eating and, enjoying what you're eating and everything like that is really some great words of wisdom. But just to kind of add to that, where is it that you find the happiness, and what is the words you want to share with everybody before we end the show?
For me, one of the things that helps me, I guess, remain happy, that sounds like a strange wording for me, but it's finding joy in the little things. Like right at this moment as we're talking, I'm looking out the window at my garden, and I see this beautiful house finch with this bright red head eating sunflower seeds out of my sunflowers, and I can see these bees buzzing and picking up pollen from the sunflower. And they're these teeny moments in time, but just recognizing that and taking that joy from that moment, for me, really, in a lot of ways, is the key to happiness. That there might be a whole bunch of junk going on in the rest of my life and things that I feel scared about or stressed about or insecure about. But when I can take that time to see beauty, to find joy in this teeny tiny moment, all that other stuff doesn't seem to be as big of a deal. And the other thing I've realized lately, too, is there's also power and benefit in allowing yourself to express those insecurities, those fears, those worries. That sometimes we go about life thinking that the way to happiness is to be happy all the time. I don't think that's true. I think part of the way to happiness is allowing ourselves to express, to feel, to recognize the things that might not be so happy, because you need to acknowledge them in order to let them go. It's just as, you watch a summer storm and all of that, you feel that like pressure building as the sky gets darker and darker, and then there's that release when the sky opens up and the rain falls. And I feel like it's similar with our thoughts and emotions, that if you're always just skipping around happy, that might be your natural state, and that's wonderful. But also sometimes you need to recognize the pain or the fears, the upsets, in order to really deepen that happiness and that joy.
Wow. All right. Well, go ahead and give out your website one last time.
It's meadowlinn.com, and that's Lynn, L-I-N-N. And I look forward to connecting with anyone and everyone on Facebook. I always respond to every post, and I love swapping stories about recipes and eating well and living well. And it would be a joy to see you on Facebook or on my website. And there is a link to find me on Facebook from my website at meadowlinn.com.
Sounds good. Thanks for being on this evening and sharing so much about yourself. You've been listening to our interview with Meadow Lynn on Spiritual Connections Radio. Thanks a lot, Meadow.
Thank you. It's been such a joy.